Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. In 1986, when a massive explosion destroyed reactor number 4 at Chernobyl, crews endeavored to combat the contamination with a hastily constructed containment structure. The solution, however, came with a deadline. The structure would fail in about 30 years, and the potential consequences could be dire. A new NOVA special looks at the international effort to deal with the new crisis. Here with more, filmmaker Chris Schmidt from Boston. Hey, Chris, welcome back.
Hi, how are you?
I am doing well, and to kind of brings you back to where you were when you first heard about Chernobyl, if you were around in 1986, doesn't it?
It does, and actually, I was actually in France when it happened, and I remember the concern of the cloud of radioactive debris that was blowing to the west across Europe. I mean, people were really concerned.
So this, at the time, you know, it's in modern-day Ukraine, correct? And at the time,
yep.
It was the Soviet Union, part
yep.
of the Soviet Union. So let's go over quickly what happened and sort of the efforts to, you know, liquidate, as we could say, clean up and contain the disaster.
Sure. So I'm not exactly sure what the technical problem was. They were running a test of some sort in one of the control rooms, and the reactor, there was an error and possibly also a mechanical failure, and the reactor, the coolant in the reactor drained out, and the reactor was left uncooled, and it melted down, and there was a massive explosion, and it released. There are four reactors there. Actually, one of the reactors blew up. One of the reactors, interestingly, is still operating and providing electricity.
Really?
But the one, yeah, but the one that blew up, you know, spewed a tremendous cloud of radioactive debris into the general area. Only a handful of people died in the immediate aftermath. But what was left was a reactor with a gargantuan hole in the roof and just this, you know, radioactive meltdown, just spewing toxic stuff everywhere. And so they had to figure out a way to try to close the hole and seal the reactor. And that's what essentially happened over the next several months.
Right. So 50,000 people are evacuated. They're dealing with everything that's happening at the same time, and then they have to sort of build something that's going to contain it.
Right.
What do the engineers come up with that they can safely construct in a quick enough time to make a difference?
Well, so what they did was they really brought in these prefab pieces of a kind of a coffin, a sarcophagus, they literally call it, and they assembled it right over that damaged part of the reactor. They didn't dig new foundations. I mean, the thing just kind of sat on the ground. And it worked for quite a while, but now it's actually collapsing, or it was, you know, and now the new enclosure is over it. But it had begun to collapse. There were holes in the roof. And the worry was if there was a catastrophic collapse, it would rip open the reactor area again and cause another big, not explosion, but another big release of toxic stuff.
So one of the questions I have as I was watching the screener for this did the engineering exist at the time to do something better? And were there political, you know, with the Soviet Union, were there political conversations? Did politics get in the way
right,
of doing
I'm
a better
sure, yeah.
job?
Well, yes. Yeah, so that's a really complicated question, because the biggest impediment to building something better at the time was the fact that you couldn't stand close enough to the reactor
right.
to actually construct something without being killed. You know, maybe not immediately, but getting a dose of radiation that would be eventually lethal. So whatever they built, they had to do it really quickly. I actually have spent a lot of time in the Soviet Union in the past, and actually around that time as well. And, you know, it was a very secretive society, in the sense that any bad news that made them look bad, they didn't want the press to know about. So the people in the area, for example, didn't really know what was going on. I mean, they were slow to kind of release information. So the idea that they were going to reach out for international help or anything else to try to build a better enclosure initially was kind of impossible. So they needed to deal with the danger of it, but they also needed to deal with the political fallout, so to speak.
Right.
Of this kind of massive
and
disaster.
So how long does it take before they start making plans to replace the sarcophagus as it existed? They know that there's a deadline,
yeah.
and it's not that, I mean, it's within their children's lifetimes or their lifetimes,
sure.
probably, so it's not that far away immediately.
You know,
how long before they get into gear?
Well, plans have been on the table for I believe, well, the minute that they finished building the thing, they knew that they had to do something. Mm-hmm. So the question was what? And the current design, at least the idea of building something next to the reactor and then rolling it over it, has been around for at least 15 years. I mean, I remember I used to produce a TV series on Discovery Channel called Extreme Engineering, which is about huge engineering and construction projects. And we were tracking this project, you know, 15 years ago, practically, when we were doing that series. And it hadn't gotten off the ground yet. And as you can imagine, it's a very complicated project. Even though it looks like you're just building this great big garden shed, it's actually a lot more complicated than that. And it's the largest structure ever to be built and moved on land. So yeah. It's very complex, and it's very expensive, and it was, you know, a lot of the complexity of the project, frankly, was putting together the international team and funding to actually get it done.
Because they still cannot construct over the site.
No, you can't.
You still can't stand next to it.
Yeah, you got to stay. There's a certain distance away that you need to stay in order to reduce the radiation exposure, and that's where they determined to build this this enclosure, and then once it's completed, roll it over. Now the problem is, this stuff inside the reactor is still there. It's going to be the material at the core will be dangerous for thousands of years. So the question is, you know, this new structure is meant to last 100 years, not 30 years, but you know, eventually it would have to be replaced, and so you're going to do a sort of like Matryoshka Russian nesting dolls of enclosures, or do something more permanent. And they came up with a design to build this robotic crane on the interior to be able to gradually dismantle and take the pieces of this thing away to store somewhere else. No one knows where.
Right. Yet. My absolute favorite part of this whole process. Well, there's two, and the first one is, you know, that not only are they building this containment structure that's never been done before, but they have to move.
Yep.
But inside of it is the deconstruction robotic yep. arms coming from a lab in Minnesota.
Yeah, yeah.
And they don't really know what happens next. They're kind of creating and doing what they can, yep. pushing the technology yep. forward and hoping yep. that the engineers of the future will be able to build on what they just did.
Yeah, yeah, and all,
which is nuts.
All yeah, they have this big radioactive debris problem, not
yeah.
just spent fuel, but just all of the concrete and steel and everything else that's been lying around there getting irradiated. So it is a big challenge, but you know, it's going to make things better. Now, interestingly, you know, people have been moving back into mostly older people have been moving back into the area around Chernobyl. The town near there was called Pripyat, and it's kind of a vacant ghost town now. And you can see people have done a lot of very evocative shooting of the abandoned buildings and mm-hmm. nursery schools and playgrounds and things like that. But older people are moving into some of the villages around the area, and they kind of, maybe they figure they have not, don't have much to lose. Maybe they just don't believe that it's really a problem. But wildlife has returned. You know, there's no real evidence in the countryside that there's a problem.
Mm.
So, and actually, there's been recent studies of the cancer rates and things like that in the area, and there's not a big spike. It's kind of interesting because it's turning out that it may be that the long-term damage to health and environment was much less than what people originally thought.
Interesting. What was that community like before the disaster of Pripyat?
It's so hard to compare to anything that people in the United States know. I mean, it was in the Soviet Union, a town that was healthy was kind of like a middle class, like a thoroughly kind of middle class place. You know, most people didn't have cars, most people didn't have phones, but you know, your life was pretty straightforward and simple. You had a job provided to you by the state. You were paid in cash. People didn't have checking accounts or credit cards or insurance or whatever. And people lived a kind of secure, what we would call a kind of limited or maybe even childlike existence in some ways. But it was, for most people, I think, kind of a happy life. I mean, it was very, very hard when shortly after this explosion. I mean, these people dealt with a double whammy, right? They lost their homes when they had to evacuate, and then the Soviet Union collapsed and threw right. everybody into, you know, chaos. And you can understand why people who lived there would feel nostalgic for the way things had been before that.
Right, right. So now this is a huge international effort, and You said that's really one of the most complicated parts of this. Who wins the design contest? Who gets in there to sort of oversee this? And how many different, people?
How many different nationalities? Well, there's American. Well, the lead engineer is French. There are American engineers on the ground there. There are Ukrainian workers. I don't know the full list of the international consortium. I don't think that the number of nationalities on the job site are huge. UK representatives. I don't think that the number of nationalities on the job site is as large as the number who participated in funding it. It was done through an international bank that was set up just for this project, so it was really complicated and very expensive. I mean, the cost was in the billions of dollars.
Right.
So.
Are we learning things from the engineering and the construction of this, the moving of it, that is going to push forward technology in other areas as well?
Well, I would say I hope we don't need to keep building enclosures to roll over blown-up nuclear reactors. So
right.
To some extent, the technological developments of this are sort of a one-off. But, you know, NOVA has done several programs over the years about nuclear power. We did one earlier this year called the nuclear option, which was really about what's next. You know, you have the Fukushima disaster and Chernobyl and climate change. And the question is, you know, do you double down on nuclear power or do you give up on it because it has these drawbacks? And there's actually a new generation of nuclear scientists who don't have that kind of stigma in their minds over either the Three Mile Island disaster or the nuclear arms race. And they really feel like this has to be cracked if we want to really reduce emissions of fossil fuels. And there are some really interesting, safe designs that are coming out of labs at MIT and other places. One even from the 1980s that came out of Argonne Labs in the U.S. that are sort of meltdown proof. So there are, in terms of the general technology around this problem, there are a lot of really exciting things going on.
So my other favorite thing about this production is I'm thinking about Chernobyl and the lives that were lost and the safety of the workers on the ground.
Yeah.
And you're talking to some of these engineers and lead workers, and they've got smiles on their faces. They're kind of having fun with how, the pressure is enormous for them because this whole structure could collapse while they're working there. For one thing, which would
high stakes.
Yeah, which would ruin, not only would people suffer, but it would ruin everything they've already built.
Yeah, and again, like I said, I've been on a lot of these big construction sites over the years for TV shows, and there is a kind of these international projects, and there is a sort of a whole kind of community of itinerant engineers and builders who move from project to project around the world.
Okay.
And they tend to be people who are interested and curious about the cultures that they move into for months or years. But they're also, they're people who just love a challenge. They want always a new challenge. And this thing is certainly a unique challenge for, all kinds of reasons.
Right. These are people who think big. Explain the giant cat doors.
Yeah,
just because what a great analogy that is.
That's great. Well, the shape of the building that it's going to enclose is irregular. So if you can imagine, it's almost like if you're looking at the flat wall of the new building that's got to roll over these things, it has to have an opening cut out of it, almost like a cookie cutter cut out, so that it would slide over these enclosures and still not have a big gap between the old building and the new building. The problem is But the position that it ends up in, the outline of the old building is different than when it first starts to roll over. So they have to build these panels that flip up to make the the opening on the enclosure much larger than it eventually needs to be. But they can't go over. Once they roll it in, they can't go in there and build something because again, it's too radioactive. So they make these flaps where it rolls over the old building, and then these flaps flip down again like cat doors or doggy doors to seal up the remaining area. It's really ingenious.
It's remarkable. But it takes 4 hours for one of them to sort of ease its way. What are the other major innovations that surprised you or that you thought were particularly ingenious?
Well, I think it's amazing that, the problem, people think of steel as being this very durable material, but in fact, as anybody who lives in San Francisco knows, the Golden Gate Bridge, which is made out of steel, has to be repainted constantly, or the Brooklyn Bridge or whatever. So steel needs to be protected through paint or some kind of coating in order to prevent it from being able to rust. So the question is, how would you protect the steel structure of this thing once it's over the deadly reactor? And what they came up with was they put an inner layer of wall so that the steel superstructure is in between, sandwiched in between the outer layer of the shed, so to speak, and then there's an inner wall. And in that area in between, they didn't get all the air out of it, but they created a system that would keep very, 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 very dry air always circulating through that enclosure to prevent moisture buildup and rusting and to slow down the decay of that material, of the steel, which I think is amazing because you'd think like, oh, you know, they'd just have to come up with a different kind of steel that doesn't rust or use some other weird alloy or whatever, but that's too expensive.
Right.
So this is a really, I think, interesting solution.
I just love that there's no quit in this. There's no give up. It's always a different, and at some point someone's asked, well, what if it doesn't work or what could go wrong? And they're like, nothing. Nothing's going to go wrong because it can't. There's
right.
No,
and imagine you do build this robotic crane inside the thing that's supposed to be there for 100 years dismantling the old reactor. Well, what if that thing breaks? You can't go in there and fix it, right? So how do you deal with that? So they had to design a system where they could bring that back out to the edge of the building and be able to swap out pieces of it if they break without actually having to go inside. You know, it's an exercise in thinking ahead, really.
Right. Remarkable stuff, remarkable engineering, and a remarkable NOVA. It's NOVA's Building Chernobyl's Megatomb. It airs tonight on SDPB-TV, 8 Central, 7 Mountain. Chris Schmidt, thank you so much for being with us here again. We'll see you next time.
My pleasure. Thank you.